Welcome to Down Among the Donkeys, a podcast from the Donkey Sanctuary. In 13 episodes, we are telling the story behind the founding of one of the biggest equine charities in the world. Down Among the Donkeys by Dr. Elizabeth Svensson. Chapter 8, Building Up. Whilst life working outside with the donkeys was physically hard and had moments of sadness, it was extremely rewarding. It needed a lot of administration too. Another member of office staff was necessary at this time, and we took a girl qualified to do the accounts side of the work. Printing the leaflets to send one out with every reply became a chore, so our own small printing machine was installed, which I felt sure would save long-term costs. The machine cost nearly £2,000, and I had to take a very deep breath before ordering it. But it has proved worth its weight in gold now that we have a mailing list of donors who have contributed to the costs of the sanctuary during the last 2 years. Jan, the new girl, took to the printing machine like a duck to water and was soon able to make all her own plates. Arranging advertisements was a difficult and important part of our job, and Ken Burks, our advertising agent, and I spent hours working out the best approach to raise the necessary funds. Careful statistics of advertising effectiveness were kept to ensure we got at least 200% return. The Telegraph or the Times brought in a very poor direct response, but a lot of inquiries regarding covenants and legacies. As you probably know, covenanted income is very helpful to charities. Simply, it means that an individual taxpayer signs a form promising to pay us a fixed sum each year for 4 years. We can then reclaim from the taxman the individual's basic rate income tax on that sum. At present, this adds an extra £3 to every £7 paid by the individual. Legacies were something new to us, but having looked carefully through accounts of other registered charities, it appeared that 50% of their income was coming from them. So at this stage, I invested a fair amount of advertising money by placing adverts in the type of paper that would attract legacies. June Evers, who had been a great friend since the age of 5, had recently lost her mother and was living alone in Exeter. As a result of a desperate plea from me, she moved into one of our flats and became a trustee of the sanctuary. Trustee meetings were getting more frequent, and it was absolutely wonderful having such a staunch friend living on site. As she was superintendent of radiography at the Devon and Exeter Hospital, her experience was also of great value. She replaced Judith Forbes, who had resigned as a trustee, being too involved with work on her own countryside parks. We were trying to get as many donkeys as possible out into good homes and needed to build up a very careful form of inspection to ensure that we selected the right homes and that the donkeys were visited regularly once they were out. Mr. and Mrs. Judge, who lived at the faraway countryside park, had been helping groom the donkeys regularly, and they joined as our first two inspectors. Walter Braybeck, one of Neil's half-brothers, helped for a while, then Sheila Basil took over. I designed special forms for them to take on their first visit, which would make sure they asked the right questions. Once these had been filled in and sent back to us, we studied them very carefully in the office to make sure the home looked right. In the past, some of the mares had got into foal, and we decided on a policy of only allowing geldings to go out, and only in twos. The inspectors now make 3 monthly visits to see that the donkeys are in good health and that the farrier comes regularly. Some of the people who sent us money were like Jean Bennett, an elderly lady who lived in Nottingham and who posted us a share of her pension every time she drew it. We named a donkey Jean after her, and when Jean surprisingly gave birth to a little foal, Sunny Jim, we had great pleasure in sending a telegram to Mrs. Bennett to tell her that her donkey had become a mother. Other elderly pensioners from all over the country would write to us weekly, sometimes sending us as little as a 10p postal order each time. To these people, our personal letter of thanks became a very real contribution to their lonely lives, and they would write longer and longer letters. I found myself taking a personal interest in their welfare. Many people wrote to us from hospitals, and children galore saved their pocket money and sent it to us. One regular donor was Jess, and she worked for a large insurance company in London. Her letter came regularly with the contributions from her fellow workers, which she collected every week. A shock telephone call one day from a member of the staff brought the awful news that Jess had been killed in the Moorgate tube disaster on her way to work, and we were all heartbroken. Coincidentally, the morning that Jess was killed, my poppet had given birth to her long-awaited foal, and so, in memory of Jess's marvellous work for our donkeys, the little foal was named after her. The company is still providing for Jess's upkeep, and we receive a cheque for £150 a year. Then there is the never-ending stream of letters regarding cruelty to donkeys in various parts of the country. These range from complaints about beach donkeys to conditions at markets and at donkey derbies, where donkeys are used to raise funds for other charities. The problem of beach donkeys has always been with us, and some extremely good work has been done by the Riding Establishments Act Committee, who are affiliated to the British Horse Society. This committee was formed in 1968 to investigate conditions in riding establishments to prevent the exploitation of horses, ponies, and donkeys, and to make sure that the legislation of 1964 and 1970 is complied with. They work in very close cooperation with the environmental health departments of local authorities and with veterinary surgeons in arranging licensing for each particular area. When bad cases on the beaches are reported to us, generally we liaise back through the REAC, as they are able to have the license of the operator stopped if the complaints are found to be correct. Conditions in the markets have never been good, and led to the ministry drawing up a new set of conditions about markets and donkeys, which have now become law. The Donkey Sanctuary was asked for advice on this and was pleased to be able to help. Donkey derbies are another nightmare. Rules and regulations have been drawn up, one of which is that no rider will be permitted to ride if over 8 stone. No driver or rider is allowed to carry whips, spurs, or any other means of inducement for increasing the speed of the donkey. Whilst in theory this is fine, in practice, the most enormous children and adults seem to ride the donkeys, and complaints are received, often accompanied by a picture from a local newspaper showing well-known personalities, rarely under 8 stone in weight, galloping to the finishing line on a pathetic donkey, literally bending at the knees. Every complaint received in the office has to be investigated. Our only interest is in the welfare of the donkey, and many of our letters as a result of the complaints receive extremely objectionable replies. Unfortunately, round tables and other charitable organisations are often responsible for promoting donkey derbies, and they never take kindly to being criticised about mistreatment. There is little we can do legally about such events, other than complain to the local authorities, by which time, of course, it is far too late for the poor old donkeys. Other letters relate to donkey racing, which is similar to donkey derbies. The Donkey Breed Society accepts some racing run under the best possible conditions where the donkey rider is a child and the donkey is not made to look a laughingstock. But sometimes stallions are used and they can be dangerous and difficult for young riders to handle. Our liaison with other animal charities on similar work has been reasonably good. Our funniest encounter was with the RSPCA inspector at Plymouth. He rang up one Friday night very late to say, "Mrs. Svensson What on earth can I do with two donkeys wandering in the centre of Plymouth? Nobody seemed to know where the donkeys had come from, nor where they were going. We set off at the crack of dawn on the Saturday and picked up the two little donkeys, whom we called Plym and Duff, and put them into an isolation box. By Sunday morning, we received a very irate call from their owner, who had apparently gone away for the weekend and returned to find his pet donkeys escaped, and sent to what to him obviously sounded a fate worse than death in a sanctuary. Plym and Duff were dispatched back to Plymouth on Monday and were the shortest staying guests we ever had. Bob Danvers Walker did a BBC radio programme called The Countryside in summer, and I did a talk with him from which we received an extremely good response. Not only some very nice letters, but also some large donations. Broadcasting always strikes me as nerve-wracking until the first 2 minutes of the programme are over, but the rewards for the donkeys make it so valuable. In organising the sanctuary and administering its many sides, we realise that every penny that we receive comes in from members of the public. I feel that our sanctuary doors should be open at all reasonable times for people to wander round and see for themselves what happens. Every single day, the sanctuary opens from 9 to 5. We restrict it to these hours because people tend to leave gates open. Once the evening round is done, I like to feel that all the animals are secure and there is no danger of them being fed any food which could be harmful. We have never made a charge for people coming round the sanctuary, and perhaps because of this, people have always been extremely generous. Our collection boxes are always well patronised, and a genuine interest from the general public is a constant encouragement. A large number of children enjoy coming round the sanctuary, and we have one donkey in particular that always gets himself into trouble. He is called Eeyore. He was the foal of Smarty, that poor little grey donkey that Niels and I carried down to our shed so many months ago. Eeyore was born surprisingly healthy and has been what can only be described as a cheeky little chap since his very first moments in life. If anything goes wrong in the sanctuary, you can always gamble that Eeyore is involved somewhere. Hardly any gate or stable door is Eeyore-proof, and if any of the old geriatrics happens to stand anywhere near the pond, Eeyore's favourite game is always to give them a slight nudge and push them in. In view of all the children's interest and with a view to raising further funds, I decided to write a children's book and chose Eeyore as my subject. Although the book was basically about how naughty Eeyore was, it gave the opportunity to tell children about the care of donkeys, how their feet were done, and how they needed to be fed properly, in the hope that the message would sink home and the next generation would treat donkeys a little better. A gentleman who had installed our printing machine had brought along a friend with him called Eve Bygrave, who loved drawing and painting and wanted to try her artistic skill on donkeys. When I had written my book, I suggested she might like to do some pictures to illustrate it with. This was the start of our partnership. I published it myself so that the donkey sanctuary could get the maximum money from the book. It was great fun being an unprofessional publisher, and with the Sidmouth Printing Company as my guide, I became involved in different typesettings and typefaces, paste-ups, and all the other processes necessary to producing a book. Although Eeyore, the naughtiest donkey in the sanctuary, looked at by the eyes of a professional publisher, is extremely amateur, it certainly began to sell in large numbers. From each book we sold for £1, the Donkey Sanctuary got 78p, because doing the publishing myself cut the total expenses of producing the book to 22p. During this time, I made a lot of visits to my parents who lived in Ottery St. Mary, as neither was at all well. My father, who had never been strong, was ageing rapidly and becoming rather frail. When they wanted a holiday, they would nip down to a hotel in Sidmouth so as to be near at hand. And thank goodness they did, because on the 13th of March I was rung from the hotel in the middle of the night to say that my father had had a stroke. 6 days later, he passed away quietly, and my mother moved in to live with us. Pat, my sister, had been married for many years by now, and her two sons, Michael and Peter, were grown up. She too was facing tremendous sadness at this time as her husband Derek was suffering from cancer. It was a very difficult time for all the family. The children found it hard to adjust to having their grandmother in the house, and the downstairs television room had to be turned into a bedsitter as she found the stairs a problem. We were extremely fortunate in that she was an easy person to live with, always gentle and kind to everybody. Her apple pies were legion, and she loved nothing better than toddling off to make a cup of coffee and bring it through to me in the evening while I was still working in the office. She played innumerable games of dominoes and cards with the children, and in fact restored our family life to something like normal. She longed to have somebody to talk to. Weekend sailing with Niels had now become a thing of the past, but I longed for his return on Sunday evening with his hilarious stories of the events at sea, which cheered me into another world far away from donkeys. By July 1976, the sanctuary had received £138,500 in cash, out of which we had been able to pay the purchase of Slade House Farm in full, and also to purchase a further 8 acres of field adjoining the sanctuary's fields. We had been able to buy a much-needed tractor, strengthen the floor of the barn to give room for another 45 donkeys, and convert and equip the offices. The fencing had also taken a sizeable amount from our funds. None of us felt it necessary to apply for a change of use for this 8 acres, as we would only be grazing the donkeys on it. The planning people, however, thought differently. The first thing that made us aware of the brewing problem was a television feature from which I heard that a long council meeting had been held regarding the use of this land by the donkeys. But the television programme was so obviously sympathetic to the sanctuary that public opinion swung to our side, and we never heard any more about having to get permission for an agricultural change of use. I had to laugh one morning. There was a letter from a publican who wanted his donkey to come into the sanctuary as the field at the back of the pub had been taken over by the council for road widening. It wasn't the fact that the donkey had to come in that made me laugh, but his request that the donkey should be given a pint of beer each day, as it had developed a tremendous liking for it, and wandered into the pub regularly for its pint. The staff were convinced I was having them on, but after the donkey arrived, its frequent braying told us that something wasn't quite right. We tried him with his pint of beer, and my goodness, what a change! He became gentle and placid, and everybody could handle him. However, within 24 hours, he was ranting round his stable again and impossible to cope with. Once again, a pint of beer produced a gentle, placid donkey, and we realised that we had our first genuine alcoholic on our hands. It took us 3 months to wean the boozer from his beer by gradually giving him less and less each day, and then adding water to make it weaker. But we managed. Since then, we have had 2 more alcoholic donkeys, including one called Bracken, who could drink a whole pint without taking his lips off the pint mug, and no matter where he was in the field, would gallop across at the clink of a pint mug. 2 more staff were needed during 1976. One person was now totally responsible for doing all the receipts and making up the orders for the Eeyore books. Eve Bygrave had produced some beautiful drawings, which we turned into notelets, and these we also sold. By Christmas, she had designed a nice card, which we printed ourselves, and that sold literally thousands in its very first year. Health and safety at work rules had to be adhered to. A fire alarm system put in, and insurance requirements met because of the ever-present risk of a visitor being injured by one of our donkeys. We have only had 1 donkey that was very difficult. He was a 6-year-old called Polly. His owner had telephoned us to tell us that the donkey was behaving in a rather aggressive manner and that she no longer felt she could keep him. We took him into the sanctuary, and the result of a blood test showed that Polly was a rig. This is a technical term for a donkey who has been castrated, but where the castration has not been completely successful and one testicle has been retained. This often leads to a difficult-tempered animal, and we certainly had a problem with Polly. The first time out of isolation, we put him in a large field of geldings, and he made such savage attacks on them all that we had to bring him back and put him in his own private box. We used to exercise him separately in the yard and introduced him to a friend with whom he eventually settled. However, very sadly one day, whilst he was exercising in the main yard, some visitors with a small girl walked through, and with no provocation at all, Polly bit the poor little girl on her arm quite badly. Polly had to be put down, as there was nothing we could do to ensure he was safe. The weekly cost of looking after the 345 donkeys we had in care then was £783, and a further £292 per week was going on wages. The meteoric rise in the number of animals and consequent administrative work now required my full time and attention. It was decided that I should become the paid administrator of the sanctuary, and in consequence, Niels and I retired as trustees. 2 new trustees were adopted. One was my sister, Pat Feather, and the other was John Morgan, who had been our bank manager for many years and was well regarded in financial circles. John Lovell joined the team as clerk to the trustees, and on this basis, we looked forward to future years of expansion.